Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. As far as things go, this week in Washington, D.C., it's been much quieter than it has been for some time. I'm wondering, Brian Stark, if this has given you some pause to be able to take a look at the marketplace and understand fundamentally where we are, especially after the USDA reports were released earlier in the week.
I think it has given us a chance to look, take a step back and look at the fundamentals. I think, you know, one of the most telling statistics from this week's USDA report was the fact that we didn't see the bean carryout grow. And I think now in the past 6 weeks, as we look with some of the rhetoric of potential tariffs, that there might be more front loading on some of the export sales. In fact, the U.S. has sold more beans over the past 6 weeks than they have every quarter going back to 11-12 for a crop year. They've sold almost 7.5 million metric tons of beans over the past 6 weeks, and that's sales, but I think some of that goes back to the rhetoric that we've experienced on potential tariffs down the road. But it also points to the fundamentals of the fact that in order for the bean complex to maintain some friendliness long-term with the current weather pattern, we had to see some more demand show up, and you're starting to see that come in on the export side to whittle away at a 550 million projected carryout.
Chuck Shelby, a couple of things that we've seen this week on that front are imports of U.S. beans by Argentina. That surprised, I think, most of the trade.
Yeah, absolutely. That hadn't happened since 2008, I believe, and we actually had two sales, I believe. When you look at that big picture, I guess it says the Argentinian crop is pretty small and maybe smaller yet than what USDA projected. Apparently Argentina is going to need to continue to crush and produce meal, and encouraging to see that happen.
Dale Durkles, how would you lay out the technical side or the fundamental side or both of the soybean market at this time?
Well, the one thing, just to follow up what the talk about Argentina there, you know, the one thing we have to remember in what happened, it really is tied into the cash market too, because what Argentina and or the exporters down there are intending to do is, you know, sell what few whole beans they may have to sell into the world pipeline here out of the crop they're ready to harvest. And we have high premiums on that, high cash premiums on that, and turn around and import beans back in out of our new crop where you have low premiums, and even though you got freight to get it there, there's an economic incentive to do it. And most of their export facilities are basically structured right along their export corridor anyway. So you offload a boat and you put it right there. So, you know, that makes sense. I think we could possibly see some of that maybe out of Brazil if old crop premiums would stay high too, with intention, let's just ship and move a lot of stuff, and yet then we can always bring back in some cheaper stuff out of the U.S., out of their new crop, or expect to do at some point in time. Technically, you know, when you look at things going on, if you want to boil it right down to the very short term, you really can't see anything at this point yet, especially after the hard break and then the quick rebound we had that started right at the end of last week, and things have held up this week. That still says, you know, we're going to try to punch this thing a little bit higher. I think the critical point in that, though, when you look at beans, is really you're looking at those very small, and they are very small, up gaps we had to start on Monday. corn seems to be somewhat structured the same, other than we don't have any gaps to work with here at this point, but you still get this feeling that this market might make one more shot to try to move up. If that fails, then I think we finally start the turn down into somewhere into very late spring, early summer. I'm basically oriented with some lows either side of Memorial Day.
As you explained what happened with Argentina and the import of U.S. soybeans, it sounds like a logistical swap. Does it change things fundamentally if those beans or another set are simply going back into the marketplace?
Well, it really doesn't change things fundamentally, other than you're moving from one crop year to another as far as the U.S. is concerned at this point in time, and even as far as the South Americans. Basically, you know, they're going to move stuff early in their quote-unquote old crop or current crop year, and then, you know, import some stuff towards the tail end for processing itself. The other unknown in here at this point in time, which is always a dilemma, especially now that we have such big inventories down in Argentina, is what will it take to get producers to go out and, as they say, open up those white sausages? In other words, those bags of stored beans around the country. That's one thing we have to keep an eye on, too, because they do have a huge inventory that they carried into this year.
So Brian Stark, he discussed the inventory, and we've known this for a while, that the carry-in Argentina is a very, very large, despite their short crop that they're harvesting at this point. Does that make much of a difference in your mind?
I think it does. I think it cushions some of the shortfall that they're experiencing. Plus, you've got Brazil's crop that'll offset that to some extent as well. And I think that's kind of been the overhead, if you would, of the market when you look out at new crop and how it's lagged to the old premiums here right now. It's amazing to me that we've got an inverse in the market with the 550 million carryout. And I think ultimately it's going to be driven based on how short is the crop from Argentina and how, to your point, willing will the producer be to let it go? Because if I believe correctly, I think they have a tax incentive. The longer they defer the sales, they get a tax break, as well as their inflationary hedge that they hold on to those. So that's going to be the key, I think. You know, will they hold on to those beans tight enough to make a shortage, as they say, out of a plentiful supply?
And then, Chuck, I'm wondering, given the acreage numbers that we saw from USDA on the 29th, plus the numbers we saw this week in the WASD, did it surprise you at all that this corn-soy ratio in Chicago did not change very much?
Yeah, it's interesting. We continually see, you know, the weather, and you look at going into the price of beans against new crop corn. Todd, I think it continues to say it's an incentive for farmers to look at beans, especially, again, you had a story about out in the Dakotas and Minnesota where it's extremely cold, and that lasts long enough, and the spring wheat doesn't get planted, bean acres seem to be probably going to likely go up.
In fact, I did run a piece on Thursday afternoon on the closing market report with Hans Condal, who is an agronomist at North Dakota State University, asking him just that question, how long it would take. Planting can go for spring wheat until about May 10, May 15. And they do, if they swap out, go to an oilseed generally rather than to a corn. So that would be either canola or soybean. So we'll see how all of that plays out. And it could add acreage into this mix. And I want to know from each of you, and I think I'll start, Chuck, with you, if you continue and or have been a seller of soybeans, and if you're looking out at this point thinking these prices, while they're 50 cents maybe better than we thought they were going to be, might be another good place to make a sale for new crop.
It seems a lot of the farmers we work with have done a good job of trying to accomplish $10 cash beans for the new crop. Some are getting a little bit higher than that now. But our producers, a lot of them have sold up to the point that they feel comfortable selling, and they seem to want to sit and hold at this point in time, maybe use some kind of other strategy like an option strategy. But in the cash side of the equation, they pretty much sold up to what they want to be.
I agree with what Chuck said. I think they've done a really good job locking in $10 cash beans. And I think as you look forward, I still think it's a sell and defend type of approach. So, you know, put call spread, something to give themselves some upside, but also protect the floor on the next layer of production is probably more appropriate than making necessarily a cash sale. I think obviously beans feel like they have potentially the most downside of either commodity today simply because of the start we're getting off into spring. And as was mentioned, up in the Dakotas and Minnesota dealing with snow and really cold temperatures.
You know, the one warning I'll give everybody out here about acreage, you know, a lot of people were really shocked with the USDA numbers back at the end of March itself on that report. But in leading up to that and putting together some expectations, you know, I saw the USDA's dilemma they had back in February. I mean, you got a total acreage puzzle that you have to piece together, and I was only thinking somewhere around a half million acres higher. But, you know, there were a lot of people who were going 91, 92, you know, looking at big numbers, but they just don't fit, you know. And when you look at this puzzle as it is, when you got the total acreage package out of the USDA, you know, you see principal crop acres are down roughly about another million. That makes sense when you have an era of continuing tight or poor farm economics. So you don't have this latitude to really increase something a lot and reduce it. The other forewarning I'll make about soybeans right now is that, you know, if you're a farmer sitting here going, well, it's getting late, what should I do? He's also got this ingredient on the other side of that equation. What's going to happen with China? And that really has ramifications, negative ones, potentially back into beans. If they do go ahead and slap on a 25% tariff on beans out of the U.S. into China. So I think as far as a corn farmer is concerned, he's probably going to sit tight a little bit longer, maybe than normal. And I would say the same thing as far as the spring wheat guy is concerned at this juncture. He probably is real careful about going, you know, let's abandon this crop and go plant some beans. I think getting over 91 million acres on beans is a real stretch. Meanwhile, you know, I've sold about 20% new crop beans, covered non-insured bushels. Yeah, maybe I could sell a few more up in here because I am selling a $10 cash bean for an awful lot of people. But I still see some things long haul that tell me not to get too pessimistic.
What do we know about, and I'll stay with you, Dale, for just a moment, about movement in the Corn Belt as it relates to producers being able to put corn in the ground? I know I've seen a few that have been able to go, but I don't think many have started yet.
Were they planting corn or were they planting beans? I've heard of a couple instances where people have gone out and actually decided to plant some beans and still wait on the corn itself. So, you know, that's a real question mark at this point, too. One, it's hard to answer. It's, you know, we're not really that wet out there. It's just that we're cold. The soils are cold. Day like today helps a lot, but then next week we're supposed to cycle back into cool weather again. But I think it's a cool soil is really the biggest impediment to getting anything done right now. And then as you go north and you get up into Minnesota and the Dakotas, I mean, you guys still have some places that have frost in the ground.
Hey, Brian Stark, when you put all the numbers together again and you start thinking about the carryout for corn, what kind of number do you come up with and what does that mean for your marketing plans?
I think if you look at, if you expect a feed usage of a $5.5 billion and a relatively stable export program, you could easily paint with the current acres and trend yield somewhere around 1.7, 1.8 billion, so sub 2 billion. And I think that's where, to Dale's point, the farmer is going to be a little more patient on corn sales because the market obviously is going to be very sensitive to weather issues moving forward with the potential acreage that we were given on the 29th of March, and then also with the fact that it doesn't appear like we're going to turn many wheels in the central part of the belt here for another couple of weeks simply because of the cold temperatures. So from that standpoint, that's kind of where I think it falls in today, and it's going to be a little more sensitive to me than the bean table.
Chuck, you're a producer. How quickly will producers, farmers, go ahead and get into the field, even under cold conditions, in your opinion?
Well, one thing you have to remember, there's a lot of preparation work that's
not really been able to accomplish yet. Some guys get their nitrogen on ahead of time. You got to spray and get ready to go. So I think it's going to be a real time crunch here. Producers seem to be looking at this weather pattern, and most meteorologists are saying it's not really going to warm up and straighten out until we get into May. So I think you'll see a big push in May. I don't think that particularly worries guys too much. They have a capability of planting a lot in a week. So I think they're comfortable sitting here. There's things they'd like to get done, but I don't really see anything really getting active until the first part of May.
I suppose, Dale, once we get into the month of May, we know that we can add, because we've done this before, plant about 40% of the crop in a single week, but it's a matter of the number of days that producers across the whole of the Corn Belt can run, and they begin to be pretty limited the further we get into the growing season. Do you see a point at which we could have a rally during the midst of our planting season?
I think you probably go back to the old standard when I was a kid, and you not long after, in the heart of Illinois here anyway, you planted corn roughly until about the 15th of May. And, if you go back and you look at some of the experiences here over the last few years, even some of the stuff that was planted a little bit late, we still had some pretty eye-popping yields out of it. True. Summertime weather has to cooperate, but I think there's less apprehension down on the farm than maybe there is in the trade. But certainly, the market's probably not going to give up a whole lot at this point, until those planters really start to roll, or at least until the weather forecast suggests there's an open window coming ahead.
Brian, what is your biggest concern for the marketplace, either corn or soybeans?
I think just what we've been talking about, I think it's simple to me in my mind. May 1st, if we're in the field and we're rolling, I think the market starts to feel comfortable because we can get a lot of corn planted in a given week. If there's not much progress by May 15th, I think obviously there's potential risk that's going to be added to the table because the calendar's going to get late. So to me, I'm more cautious on corn, and I think the weather and the way it plays out here in the next 30 days is going to be the biggest risk.
I have to ask you a question about ethanol as well. On Thursday, it was reported that the president is considering a 15% blend year-round for the nation. How much help would that offer?
From my seat, even though I'm not directly connected to our ethanol side of the business, I would say it's got to be somewhat friendly, given the rhetoric and the fact that the president's kind of backed off talk of the RFA policy, the standard, the renewable fuel policy. I think the fact that he's trying to at least give an opportunity for the farmer, I think it's correlated to some of the negative rhetoric that potentially could come down with tariffs and his way of trying to find a way to help the agricultural producer through some other tough decisions that may have to be made moving down the road. So to me, a higher blend year-round, it has to be friendly to price and to demand.
Yeah, so China and NAFTA opposed to the ethanol side of this marketplace. I guess that maybe is how you might balance it out. We'll see how that balances. Dale, I know you've probably been thinking about this too.
Well, the one cautionary note I put in all this at this point is how much capacity do we have to produce ethanol out there? And I think that's a real ingredient people have to stop and think about. For this year, we're already plugging in at this point in time, something short of 5.6 billion. And nobody knows for sure how much we can produce. But I think when you start punching over 5.6, certainly as you get to 5.7, you're sitting there going, do we really have much more room to really grind ethanol? And if we go to a 15% blend, actually it may be the ethanol processors that really gain the most out of this, more so than the farmer himself.
I was thinking about that. If I remember correctly, there are two, and maybe you can help me out, Brian, plants that are being built at this point, but that capacity would come sometime later, and I don't know when that extra capacity might be put into the marketplace.
Right, I think, you're right, and it's probably more of a 2019 thing than it is necessarily this year. So, capacity obviously could be changed, but it takes time to bring it up online. So there could be a delay, and Dale makes some pretty good points with that.
And so we'll have to wait that one out as well. Good news that the president is considering it. I suppose also good news that he sat down again, this time today on Thursday, with the congressman and the ag interest to talk about agriculture. And the next version of the Farm Bill was released with a potential for the ARC and the PLC programs to be updated, for base acres, I think, to be changed potentially as well, and for sign-up to change in those particular programs. Lots of things happening in D.C. and across the planet. Chuck, I know it's got to make your job trying to help farmers manage a crop year a little on the difficult side, because there are so many things that are moving at this point.
Absolutely. And we had the announcements on the tariffs. You saw the market really take a nosedive. We saw a USDA report that was on the positive side. Market went back the other way. There's a lot of moving components and volatility that really made things a little more difficult. You throw in the weather. So it's turning into one of those years that we really have a lot of things going on, a lot of things that can make some, impacts. But I think most of the guys are taking the steps where, again, if you can take some $10 beans, make some money there, have opportunities to get near $4 corn if you have a bin. Guys are getting some of that accomplished, and then sit back and see how a lot of these things play out, because they're out of our control and there's not anything we can do about them.
Dale, when the market fundamentals provide volatility, does it give the technical trader a more ability to create opportunities, meaning that there are places in the market that they can stair step in?
Oh, that's a difficult thing to answer, really, to be honest. The one thing, though, that I will say, when your market, the fundamental structure that you address gives you more uncertainty, and with that more volatility, I think it allows the short-term technical parameters to probably have a bit more of an impact, and you get a lot more short-run volatility within that kind of a framework, especially with today, the high-frequency traders, coming and going real quick, and they mainly just provide some grease to the market. But those system traders out there with buy and sell stops, you get a little bit more volatility. You poke markets out to some new highs. Typically, in this kind of environment, you're going to hit some buy stops in the mix, and so you do get a little bit more upside momentum in this kind of a situation, I think, that we're within right now.
Brian, how do you have to protect the elevator itself under these conditions? Does it make a difference?
I think it, from our standpoint, we have seen a lack of forward contracting by the producer the last few years ahead of time. And I think we've encouraged them to be a little more proactive. The last two or three years, we've had fairly good sized crops in our area. And I think just from a management of risk and ending in October and asking the question, now what do we do with all the unsold old crop? I think they've done a better job, especially on beans, being ahead of the curve. And from our standpoint, that also benefits us when you get a little bit better forward book on, I think, ahead of time. And from my standpoint, I think that's how we've tried to protect ourselves in an uncertain environment, as well as help the producer manage his risk.
And are you able to leverage the crop insurance, Chuck, in this kind of marketplace to help a producer?
Well, it certainly is something that can help you get through these volatile times. And who knows? Again, there are some weather guys who believe forward in the summertime, things could dry out, warm up. That dryness in the far western states moves towards the east and north. So there's a lot of things going on again, Todd, and you just use all the tools available out there to you.
I'll point to an article that Gary Schnitke has written this week about crop insurance, in which he gives some of the numbers for soybeans and where the coverage levels might pay out on the downside given a $10.21 harvest price. At the 85% coverage level, payout doesn't come to $867, 80% at $8.17, and at 75% at $7.65. So I offer those numbers up only because there are some who would be willing to go ahead and make sales larger, I think, than they might at some point, and they need to know how much risk there is. And what's covered. So the payouts would come at those levels again, because you'll want to hear them again at $10.21, 85% coverage level payout start at $8.67, 80% at $8.17, and at 75% at $7.65. You can read that on our website at willag.org. Probably better off to go to the Farm Doc Daily website to get all of the details. Gary Schnitke wrote that on Tuesday of this week. So those are just some of the things I suppose producers have to really consider, because there will be some, I think, that want them to have more soybeans sold up front than they usually would. Are you okay with that? Is this a coverage option that works for you, Brian Stark?
It is. I think, obviously, it's the cheapest put, revenue put, that a producer can put himself on the market, given the subsidy from the government. And I think that's where most of our producers start their marketing plans with, is that as a leverage. But I think, you know, anytime a producer gets over 40 to 50% sold on his expected production this time of the year, it's important to look at some sort of protection. That's where I come in with the sell and defend approach. And just because we don't know how this is all going to play out, we want to allow some upside. We want to protect ourselves from that avenue. And that's kind of how we've gone about it, is some producers get up to that level. We don't want to simply be flat price sellers or even hedgers. We want to make sure we're using some sort of option strategy or an ability to protect ourselves in case the market runs higher.
Dale and then Chuck, do you have something to add on this topic level, Dale?
Not really. I think that's kind of important, you know, the way he looked at it. You know, when you start pushing up 40 and 50% sold this early, you know, you really need to have some kind of a plan to defend against that in case we do run into a weather environment. Although if you got revenue insurance, you still have some backstop with it there. But, you know, I step back and, you know, he was talking about, you know, where your realistic price level is. That's basically, and I'm assuming without having read that paper, assuming you don't have anything priced. And basically that's why I have my non-insured bushels covered. So if your non-insured bushels are covered, your base guarantee under your market realistically is the February insurance guarantee.
And that would be at $10.16. Chuck Shelby, your thoughts?
Well, I think it just points out the fact that in this environment, again, we've got some opportunity of price that, you know, again, guys can make money around $10. I think each farmer has to look at his own farm and say, okay, what's my normal production? What can I think I can normally grow? And then price a portion of that, and I don't have a problem with going 30-40. I have a few guys that are 50% sold, and they know they've got a decent price. And then looking forward, though, again, if you're going to be that aggressive, as Brian stated, you probably need to have some plan in the back of your mind to get some call options if it looks like we may need those if the weather starts to show some hot and dry patterns moving back towards the north and east.
Brian, we've come to the end of our time. Let's get a final word, and we'll start with you, Mr. Stark.
I think the biggest thing is we got an opportunity to watch the weather the next 30 days. It's crucially important, and I think having open offers in at levels that are profitable before you hit the field is a good way to capture some volatility that might happen when you're planning.
Dale Dirkles?
The one thing I would suggest to anybody is just to be disciplined, make sure that you have your cost structure intact, know where that's at, market according to where you think you need to be given your crop insurance situation.
And Chuck Shelby.
I think corn may have some opportunities if we can see kind of a delayed slow planting, and also when you look at the tighter carryouts and the expanding demand. Corn may be a sleeper in this market right now. It's not really doing anything. Soybeans are your leader, but corn may have its day yet to come.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.